It's April 16th, 2018, and I haven't played very much Dota. I'm Six Detmar.
And I'm Nick Cease, and this is Bottle Core Reborn, a Dota 2 podcast where we talk about Dota 2 on a podcast. And it feels like I haven't introduced the podcast in at least a few podcasts. And I'm Nick Cease. And for today's shocking revelation of the week, I'm going to reveal the secret of our just immeasurable success. Is that okay with you, Six?
Oh, geez.
I figured it's about time. Episode 92, I mean.
Yeah, I guess.
It's basically already in the bag. So, do you speak any French?
A little, yeah.
You do. Can you count in French?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9,
there you 10. Go. There you go.
Wait, what?
What is your name?
Six.
Yes. What is six in French?
Six.
Exactly.
Fuck.
Exactly.
Fuck. I hate it.
It's a 20-something year-long con on my part.
You can't translate names, though. That's bad.
What do you mean you can't translate names?
Like, it's a doable thing. It's just a bad... Like, when fucking UK motherfuckers... Okay, let's just say Britain.
Oh,
at the time, it was just Britain. We're like, you know what, Jeanne d'Arc? That's stupid. We're going to call her Joan. Like, fuck you. That's not her fucking name.
Is Joan of Arc on a podcast?
I don't know. I mean, there's probably
Joan of Arc.
I bet there is a Fate Stay Night related podcast where one of the co-hosts pretends that they're Joan of Arc.
www.historyextra.com. The Trials of Joan of Arc. Jan Jones speaks to Helen Castor about her new book on the tragic French heroine Joan of Arc. The History Extra podcast. This has been advertising other podcasts of the week.
Anyway, that's the secret to our success, I guess.
Yeah.
So I'm told.
So let's just move right in. Now that the cat is out of the bag, no longer in the bag, let's just move on. This week, happy birthday to KP of Newbie.
Indeed.
I have no idea how old you are, because the only information I can find on this was your Twitter account tweeting about it. Your birthday, rather, is not even on Liquipedia, the source of all knowledge.
Indeed. Looking at him, I'm going to say he is
60 years old.
Under 30.
Oh, okay. I was a little bit off, but that's okay.
Yeah, probably under 30.
Okay.
30 under 30.
I mean, that's a pretty safe assumption for 95% of Dota players, so.
That's why I made it.
Looking at his name, KPII, I can tell. Yes, okay. So, did you play any Dota this week?
I played one game of Dota.
I see. I think
it went bad. You were there.
I was.
Yes.
Okay.
You were a life stealer. It went bad.
Yes. I think I do remember this. Yes. That's unfortunate. I've had a few more games this week. I've been having really long games this week. Well, we can mention the patch stuff in a bit too. It's a little bit late at this point, but because of, you know, lovely Thursday things, but I don't know if it's just that. It's not just the small patch changes, but boy, I've had 50 too many snipers in my past three games. It's just that high ground siege, just loving it. Also, I had a game here. I had a 87-minute Treant Protector game, which is close to my record of 89 minutes. I had 49 assists, so I broke my record on most assists. This will be my last episode because I've started playing techies a little bit in normal matches. Just because I haven't been playing them, because I like to enjoy the game and I like other people to enjoy the game.
I've got the second monitor and I could be watching Netflix.
Exactly. It's just, I don't know, I feel... I don't like that there's heroes that just aren't played. Generally people don't play. So I'm like, you know what, fuck this. I will play Meepo. I'm not complete garbage at Meepo. I'm like you know, I'm burnable garbage at the very least. You can burn me for energy.
Sure. No, I've seen your Meepo. I guess that's fair.
I know theoretically. Well, I know how to practically do the blink poof thing where you blink your one Meepo and then suddenly five other Meepos show up.
It doesn't really. Pretty easy.
It is, honestly, if you have like fast enough fingers. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. not hard. It's just to actually use it properly, to use anything of Meepos properly. Yeah, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hot take of the week: Meepo is hard. And then, lastly, over the past few weeks, I've been noticing, like I mentioned, how I'm not really feeling that try hard spirit. And I think you're kind of the same way.
Yeah.
And then I've noticed that I'm, I guess, less nice, which is weird, because normally I would, like, you know, I first started being part of a Dota community for the We Like Dota community, and those guys, you know, in the Dota 2 channel, the Discord, the podcast, the subreddit, they're all nice fellas, and it's great. And that's why, you know, like, I've got online friends with people from there now. But I was much nicer when I was playing with those people. And I mean in terms of, like, being patient in my mm-hmm. approach to the game. Because in this 87-minute Treant Protector game, I think it was a normal game. It was, like, a four-stack, and then we were playing with another guy we didn't really know. And I was, like, very frustrated at the end when we ended up losing. And I was like, but why do I care? Why didn't, you know... And I think this person might have been, like... Yeah, they're coming back to the game after a year of not playing. And normally, like, I'd more proactively, like, think of things to help this person out or think of what they wouldn't know or not be, like, at all frustrated when they did something that's like, oh, yeah, you know, the rune doesn't spawn in the river anymore, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it's not that, like, I was flaming people or anything. I haven't started flaming people in my games more. It's just, like, I feel like I'm,
Internally, the emotional reaction is different.
I'm too dead inside compared to, like, okay, I have the drive to become better at this game, this skill. And so I also want to be good at helping my team like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like my own personal drive being lower has lowered my drive to be a more useful team member as well.
I see.
Which is, you know, a negative thing.
So I mentioned before that I was like, maybe I'll take a hiatus and play other games, other competitive games, and, you know, like, and remember why I love Dota so much, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been playing some Overwatch, and I don't know how much I'm allowed to talk about that on this podcast.
Apparently, it's the thing to do. Like, Day 9 has been doing it.
I don't generally. I mean, I like Day 9, all right. I don't tend to watch streamers very much. But
I've just seen him tweeting and stuff, and then friend of the show, Mr. Blue, has been doing the exact same thing, apparently. He's been playing Overwatch. Our friend Church has been playing Overwatch.
Buck Foy, who you mm-hmm. may remember, that's right. has been playing a lot of Overwatch. And then, like, I felt like it was pretty well encapsulated when we were playing, and we played a couple of games, and Buck was like, hey, like, do you want to switch to Dota? And Church was, like, in the most, like, oh, it's such a, I can't do a good Church voice, but he's just like, why? Why would we do that? Like, yep. Every time I play Dota, I'm miserable. This game is fun. It's like, I mean, that's a little strong. I don't know that I feel that strongly about, but it's like, yeah, no, I'm just having a good time, and I'm not with Dota right now. It's like, I'm playing healers where I feel like I have an effect. There's no concept of farm, so I'm as effective as anybody else, you know?
It's kind of like the Heroes of the Storm. I know I get the actual title. Heroes of the Storm, right? That's the actual name, mm-hmm. not Heart yeah. of the Storm. Whatever. It's, you know, it's a more bite-sized experience. The stakes are even lower. It's shorter. Yet you still kind of have, you know, you have an ultimate. You're mm-hmm. you're immediately into the action, though, and it's frequent. Like, a bunch of the people we play with, me especially, also like PUBG. And I'll play PUBG a bunch with them. I almost have never, ever played solo. I hate that game for the most part. It's I feel the same way about Dota. Well, I feel the way about PUBG how I do about the worst of Dota 2 games, where it's like maybe in Dota 2 you do more action, but like you farm for a while or something, and maybe it's a really boring game and you're just farming or something, and then like you die and the enemy snowballs and it's dead. It's been like PUBG. It's like, oh well, maybe, you know, I'll run around, I'll drive this vehicle, and then oh, somebody kills me, and I feel like I haven't played a video game. But that's why I can definitely understand that Overwatch, the itch that it satisfies, you know? And it's like, why would I go play this super serious Dota game right now?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I mean, also, like, there are little things about Overwatch. Like, there are some attempts by Overwatch to sort of make light of I don't know, things that don't work for me, right? Like, they have their goofy skins, and it's just like, my opinion on that shit is fucking well established. But then also, you've got shit where it's like, okay, here's one that's unintentional. Play of the game. Play of the game in Overwatch is, in theory, this way to encourage people for pulling off really great, you know, game-changing plays and making everyone be like, oh man, that was really cool, like, good job. In reality, you get, like, you know, you see the, like, play of the game, and you're like, okay, what are we gonna get this time? And you see, like, you know, a Junkrat who's, like, this grenade launcher hero, like, kill one person and then fall off a cliff, and then the camera is just staring at the cliff for the rest of the clip, and it's like, that's fucking hilarious. It's not what the game is going for, but it really cuts the tension of Overwatch in a way that's kind of fantastic, actually.
Yeah. And, like, make no mistake, this is absolutely a grass is greener thing, but hey, there's nothing wrong with some just bright green grass sometime. Mm-hmm. Maybe that sounds a little weird, but hey, there's, you know, go eat something tasty. That's fine.
Wait, what? Grass?
Grass, our analogy is falling.
I mean, I know I'm in California. Is this a weed thing?
Is this? I don't know. You are in California. I'm on Puritanical East Coast. Is it a weed thing? .com.
I'm going to bet that you've done more weed in your life than I have.
I would absolutely bet not, actually. And I would be
really
completely correct. Mm-hmm. Is it a weed thing? .com is not taken.
.biz.
Oh, wait. .biz. Is it a weed thing? .biz. Is also not taken.
Bottle Crow episode 100. We'll think about it, and if it's okay. Still there.
What were we talking about?
Oh, I mean, just about, game. Yeah, not wanting to play Dota, mostly.
Recapturing the competitive spirit.
Yeah, for our and that's also.
Sorry selves.
Yeah, and that's also part of it was like, okay, I'll recapture the competitive spirit because I'll play Overwatch and I'll start to get competitive with it, and then I'll get frustrated because the balance is shit, and I'll want to go to a game where the balance is good, and that's not happening. So I don't know. I need a new plan.
Maybe I need to play competitive Overwatch. The times I've played Overwatch, it's very hit or miss for like being completely stomped and having no idea what to do because I don't know the game, and I also don't know if you can know the game well enough sometimes to stop yourself from being stomped, like I kind of do in Dota. Or it can be like an actual close game, but those are less often. I should play more seriously with our new budding Overwatch folks.
Indeed, indeed. Chest crow. I'm trying to figure out what you would call a. You know, cause this is the loot crates.
Pay what? Oh, that's right. Pay loot crow. Is there any concept of a bird in Dota, in Overwatch? Mercy has wings.
Yeah, but and like Pharah has some bird skins, kind of.
If they put a bird hero into Overwatch, maybe we'll become an Overwatch podcast. Where we talk about Dota 2 on a podcast?
No, you know what? Fucking Reaper has like a Raven skin.
Well, there we go.
Bullet Raven. No, we... Oh, God. Ooh. That sounds like a high school metal band. Let's move on.
Let's talk about Dota 2. So, we've got, I think, a bunch of pro drama this week to talk about. We've been neglecting just the juicy, juicy pro drama that's been going on. So, Let's fucking get it out there.
All right.
Okay. First off, Weeha is now on Pain Gaming, that Brazilian team, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in Brazil now.
Well, good for him. I'm excited to see him play more Dota. I like that player.
Indeed. Next up, let's go to Fnatic. So for Star Ladder, PyLiDai was subbed out. PyLiDai, we know he was playing some games in C, so he just stayed behind. And their coach, 343, stood in during Star Ladder, which normally if you have like one stand-in, your DPC points you get out of whatever you win in a tournament, you get 25% less. In this case, it didn't really matter for them because they tried some really weird shit. They moved people's positions a lot, apparently. Itemized even weirder than normal in a lot of positions. So it seems like it might have just been like this fluke. Maybe if there was some reason PyLiDai didn't want to go. I don't know. EE kind of
maybe he had some refused to talk about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Could have been like some personal like thing or I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Screw Starler.
Or, I mean, you know, I mean, 343 is the coach. Maybe this was like an attempt to be like, okay, what is it like if someone else is calling the shots instead of EE?
Yeah, I was wondering, like, that would be a good thing for them to experiment with, as we've thought perhaps before.
But it would also explain why EE might be salty about it. So
Yeah.
Well, you know, I like Fnatic. I feel like they're the closest I have to actually having a team these days. Just because, I don't know, they're interesting and I want to see them do well, but yeah. It doesn't seem like, I don't know, they're still in the runnings for having enough DPC points to make it. But
I mean, it all depends. The way things are going to shake out for the rest of the year are looking weirder and weirder. And there's lots of Twitter drama flying about now that I can't even get angry or like think is unreasonable about the whole invite stuff, because you know the last event of the year is the Chinese Super Major, because it's a $1.5 million prize pool tournament versus the $1 million majors that everything else has been, which means somebody else is putting forward more money besides the like $500,000 Valve gives. But that means it gives the most DPC points too, so it could shake things up the most. Because VP, you know, Liquid Secret have consumed the majority of the points. But that also, like, it kind of invalidates the whole purpose of the DPC. Let me just get into this now. Has the DPC been a complete disaster?
I think there have definitely been some, like, some scheduling and organization failures. Plenty of them. But like I feel like the point system basically works, and the only problem with it is the fact that there have been, you know, essentially two teams dominating this year. I feel like in more years you'd see, like, we've seen more up and down, VP and Secret just having such a ironclad grip on the top is a little unusual.
I suppose I definitely agree with you in part, because I also think that it's been this way like forever, that a team's performance over an entire year changes. It does not stay stagnant. So the fact that like you accrue points throughout the year seems a little weird. And originally they said that they were going to increase the number of points an event gets as it gets closer to TI. They decided not to do that because, well, I would theorize because then it invalidates or devalues earlier tournaments, so organizers would be less willing to run them, and then everybody would want to crowd in at the very end when, you know, every team would fight for you and stuff like that, fight to be in you. But the more I think about it and the more complaints I see about this kind of stuff, it's all about the invites and the qualifier spots and the format, which is really quite boring to not only talk about on a podcast a lot without heavy, like, I don't know, journalistic distillation. You have to, like, distill all this shit into something that, like, makes some sort of sense, because it's all sorts of talk about, you know, we mentioned DE, Nahas trying to come to an agreement about what the best tournament format would be. All this extra stuff that, you know, is very important, players care about because they deal with it all the time, and it affects, you know, their schedules affects how, quote unquote, fair the outcomes of events seem and qualifiers. But it's so fucking boring. And I don't even want to pay attention, much less try to explain it in a somewhat entertaining way on a podcast.
Well, I mean, to a certain extent, it's not our problem, right?
It isn't, but all this complaining, every complaint I see from even, like, so EE's been tweeting more about it. PPD's been tweeting about it more recently than really the whole year.
Yes.
And I hate how much I agree with him, despite the fact that he's being his salty little, you know, jerk self a lot of the time. He's almost never actually wrong about all this shit in terms of the invite allocation. Like, the super major, it seems like he has some insider info, and it would make sense. It seems like OG and EG are going to get invites to this thing, this Chinese super major, which might make sense from, like, a... whatchamacallit? I don't know, like a pragmatic viewpoint, because...
Like an entertainment perspective?
Not even that, but like the current results don't necessarily matter because you have to deal with this shit months in advance, right? Maybe not, you know, too long, but you have to, you know, extend the invitation. A team has to have a period in which they decide and then accept or reject the invitation, and then you have to organize qualifiers for the rest of the spots, yada, yada. And so you have to plan these things in advance. So I understand that, but, I mean, OG aren't even eligible for DPC points anymore because they lost Rezo, and now, like, they're disqualified. So they can't even gain points from the major that will have the most points allocated is the most important thing, as right before TI, they are taking up a spot that a more eligible team could. Which is, like, you know, that's one thing, but it... I want to watch OG. Like, it's cool to watch
these
names, you know, no-tail, these people at this tournament. And so, of course, you want to invite EG. Of course you want to invite OG. But then what the hell is the point of the DPC? Because how is that going to actually be a proper show of who's, quote-unquote, worthy to be invited to TI?
I mean, it's not... I think
it's just
people...
that it's happened so often. Like, this is the same problem we talked about, I don't know, like, as soon as we knew what the DPC was. And we talked about, like, hey, of course Navi's going to get invited to this tournament in, you know, Russia and Ukraine or somewhere. They're, you know, people want to make money. People want to have viewers, have an entertaining tournament. You want to see your favorite faces. But when it happens so often, and of course it's going to happen so often because there's the same motivation for every organizer, then, like, what the hell is the point of the DPC? It's supposed to be a more concrete, like, a more, I don't know. It's something you should be able to rely on, and so people won't be like, oh, they didn't deserve an invite, yada, yada. Why did they get invited to TI? You want to have these actual criteria. It's like, oh, of course they have, you know, they're in the top eight of DPC points. But it's not, I don't know, it's not something like the Premier League of English soccer. There's a point system there, and then the tiebreaker is the goal differential. It's like how many goals you score. So in their league system, if you get a win, that's 3 points, and if you tie, you draw, that's 1 point to both teams. And then, you know, you have a table, and then based on that table, like the bottom two teams, they get relegated to a lower league. The top something teams, you know, they get to play in the playoffs, they get to advance to the next league, stuff like that. A point system makes sense when you have a regular format for the way teams are going to play each other. But there's a bunch of, like, and I don't even have good stats on this because it wasn't very interesting to even look at, but there's people breaking down the, like, lower end of the top eight, like top 12 in the DPC points as we have it now. And it's like, oh yeah, well, if you actually look at the amount this team in 10th place, like VGJ Storm, if you look at how many of, like, the top four teams they've beaten, you know, they're better or worse than EG, who has played all these games, and then they have this X win percentage against the top four teams. And then you start to realize, like, wait, what the hell does this DPC thing even mean? I don't know. I'm very disappointed with the DPC system as the year goes on. I mean, minors, what's the point? It's... it was supposed to be a thing that would encourage tier two, tier three teams, right? We thought that, you know, it might be better because, you know, not every team would be able to make it to every minor and every major. So big, quote unquote, big teams would focus on majors, and then smaller teams would be able to make it into the minors. That's not what happened, right? Every team is going to go for every point opportunity they can get.
Yeah.
So I have a negative viewpoint at this point in the year.
So here's where I'm coming from, right? A few points there. One, I think the point of minors, and it's a point that we have trouble both as viewers and as players getting a fucking grip on, is you can't just have the majors because you need some tournaments that don't matter as much, partially just for pacing, for entertainment's sake, and also just, like, it's a place for people to play Dota and get better at Dota. Like, you can only learn so much in scrims or in, like, you know, like, pickup games. You're going to learn a lot more and a lot differently in a proper tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the benefits of minors is that the teams, like, I don't have data on this. This is really just, like, how I read things. So, like, you know, take it for what it's worth. But I would bet you that the teams that are going to more minors are getting better faster. They're adapting to the meta faster.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have a better, they're going to be in a better position when it comes to bigger tournaments. Now, I share a lot of your concerns about problems with the Dota Pro circuit. And I think changes need to be made. But at the end of the day, and, you know, it feels like it always comes down to this, but there's a good reason. I mean, this is entertainment. And, like, getting the right team, getting the verifiably best team into, you know, to win the international or getting them the invites is secondary to entertainment and selling tickets.
I agree with basically everything you've just said, but then why have a DPC system? I'm finding myself wishing that there was these subjective people at Valve deciding at the end of the season, okay, based on past performance and on the current performance, even if they weren't at the super major, like if, you know, what the hell was our last team? I don't even remember. If, you know, fucking Bristleback Steakhouse, they did really well at this one major, but they, for reasons, weren't in the super major. Okay, well, based on the past performance of Bristleback Steakhouse, let's invite them to TI. I would rather have that than this, like, pseudo accurate, measure of how good a team has been and is this year that the DPC system seems like it's supposed to be. Like, I agree with everything you said. Like, it's just, like, fucking entertainment. Like, we're all just people trying to watch people play a video game for money. Mm-hmm. And I agree with all of that. But then it's like, okay, why have the DPC system? It doesn't fit what this is supposed to be.
Our last team was Defy Logic Gaming.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
So this is an attempt to compromise somewhat in the direction of more fairness and also to create a system that people understand. Like, this is showing people how the sausage is made. When it's just like, okay, at the end of the year, Valve will invite some people, it's really hard for teams to know where they stand. One of the values of the DPC system is people can look at a chart and be like, okay, we are this far away from TI. We have the numbers, and we know, like, and we can be like, okay, well, let's go to these extra tournaments and let's really push. Or you can be like, well, like, we're, you know, like, Vici can be like, okay, we're already in, we can take it a little easy. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing is arguable. But I think, like,
it's really valuable. But what about a team in 10th place, and then they don't get invites, but people in 20th place, people with no points get invites, but you have your Navi, you have 1,200 points, and you don't get the CIS invite to a tournament. There's nothing you can do about that. That's not based on anything your team could do. It's just like, okay, this, we're, you know, we need X amount of points to get into the eighth place spot based on however, you know, these other teams do at this tournament. They're bigger names, they get the invites, but we, like, we are the most un disadvantaged position because, you know, three tournament organizers, like a major, a minor, and then another major, decided that we didn't get this invite spot. Or they, based on their formats, they allocated one CIS instead of two CIS spots. Just all this, like, very format-specific shit.
But this isn't new inequality. This is inequality you're seeing. This inequality was always there. Like, there were always
teams, like...
It's quantified,
though.
Right. So, like,
so three years ago, to subjectively adjust, and now, like, I highly doubt Valve had an internal DPC system before. Maybe they did, but I would think it's just, you know, you subjectively adjust. And so you can actually account for this kind of thing happening.
But 3 years ago, it would be like, oh, like, they invited Vici. Why'd they do that? Oh, of course, because they just won ESL 1. And it's like, well, these teams didn't get invited to ESL 1. They didn't even have a shot at that. Like, almost every team previously, you could be like, oh, because they got this big win. Or because they have this track record. I mean, I think the only difference is seeing the numbers. I don't think it's a difference in how it's actually working for the most part.
But the numbers are the decision-making factor this time. There's no appreciation for, like, Team DLG. They came in late right at the end of the last roster lock, and they've had this pretty impressive run. Like, they placed decently in these tournaments, but they were minors. But they were minors played against Liquid. They beat Liquid in, like, a string of three minors, but that was just that. Even though they beat Liquid and they beat Secret, it doesn't matter because they were just minors, and so, you know, whoop-de-doo.
I mean, that's fair. I don't know. That's the difference between a system that is a system and a system that is a person just choosing shit. And it's like, yeah, the system's gonna sometimes put its foot down. And so did the person who was just randomly being like, I think EG deserves it this year. There were variables they weren't considering. It's just they didn't tell you what they were, so it feels better to you.
But the system is, a person can make decisions. This system has been locked in stone for like a year.
Right, which
and
means
the system
you can
is
make...
not seeking to find the best team based on all the shit that's gone on. Like, this isn't we're not in a league system where every team, like, plays through this set schedule and a set format in which, you know, every team plays against each other. There's no, like, team MMR that's win or lost. It's just,
I think there are compromises, but it is seeking to find the best team.
I heavily disagree. Have you not, like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm too deep into all this complaints and the invites and
I think there are ways it goes wrong. And, like, the system is not, like, I think you can't conflate the system and the people running third-party tournaments. They are in the system, they are not the system. And Valve maybe should use...
I've lost the thread of what we are trying to argue about now, but... Of course, the people in the tournaments are going to try to create the most entertaining, like, event. I think everything you said before about that, that's totally true. But then what's the point of this system that's going to pretend like, oh, well, then based on how they do in this, you know, this is how we're going to decide stuff. I'm not saying it's the worst way to do it, but it's an ignorant way. It's just blind. And this works only if you have teams play each other equally. And we have nothing like that.
But, like, okay, so with the season we've had so far, how would you pick people? Like,
you,
I think
based
this
on
system
results and how they play.
So what
the
they're
best
doing?
Teams. No,
I mean, like, you can't say based on results like how they play the best teams, because, like, you'll have games of, like, EG versus, like, I don't know, like, Let's say, like, EG versus VP, and it's like, okay, these are two big-ticket teams. Let's see, like, whoever wins this, that's obviously important. And then, like, it's a minor tournament, so they have clowny drafts, or they don't take it very seriously, or they have a sub. I mean,
then,
like,
the human can see that, though. The human knows about Dota, and the human sees that and says,
right,
okay,
but then
in my mind, this matters less. It doesn't matter one-third less, you know, I don't know, 450 to 250. Yeah, like, it doesn't matter. This is not a fourth of the weight in my mind compared to this major result. I can, like, balance that in my mind based on the situation. I can be cognizant of the actual situation that happened versus just, oh, well, this was a minor, 450 points versus 2250. the system is like locked in stone. It's very ignorant of anything besides the results of this tournament. And so then you're completely reliant on the tournament formats and invites and stuff, which, you know, on the short term, like, yeah, shit's going to happen. And that's why for, you know, since we've had this, I haven't really brought up an overarching discussion on it. But because we've had these complaints for so long now, and it's like, you know, it's the same thing over and over and over, I'm like, what's the point of this system? It's not encouraging tier two teams, and it's not really securing the most like fair or the most accurate representation of teams' skill.
I mean, like, I think it's pretty fair to say that VP and Secret are like the top two teams that should be invited to TI by anybody's measure.
Sure.
I don't know.
But I mean, you don't need points to see that whatsoever.
No, but that suggests that maybe the points are working somewhat. I think there's value in having a system that people can, that's transparent and people can understand what it would take to get a result. I think people are undervaluing how frustrating it could be to be a team that like played your fucking heart out and it's just like, oh, you just don't get invited to TI. Why? You didn't get one. I think it's way, like, there are downsides to it, but I think it's really important that teams can see, like, this is the difference between me and TI. I can measure this distance.
But there's nothing to do about it. There's,
I mean, I think...
It's out of your hands. I don't think you're necessarily completely wrong, but it's like you're arguing to just have a system so that there is a system, which, like, I think the issues people talk about with the invites and the tournament formats, this is just a constant loop. Like, this is never going to be solved. I don't foresee every tournament organizer getting together and saying, okay, we will all have X format. We will never have best of ones to elimination, like best of ones in our tournament. I don't see this ever happening. I see this being an eternal thing because this happened beforehand, but it wasn't before we had the DPC, but it wasn't such a big issue compared to like, hey, I literally do not have the opportunity to make it into TI compared to X team because your organization was trying to create an entertaining tournament.
So I'm sympathetic to a lot of your concerns, but in large part, it feels to me like you're roping in every single problem with Pro Dota and throwing it at the DPC, which seems unreasonable to me.
Well, the DPC is, it's got a, it, why do we have the DPC? Like, I agree with...
circles and circles.
I know. I agree with everything you say besides, and thus the DPC is good.
I don't think it's good. I just think
it's needed? I don't know.
It's useful and it could be improved, but I think the idea of a system is a good idea.
I think the idea of a system is a good idea, but having a system just so there is a system is a very... It's a dangerous fallacy because it's like, oh, well, it's not transparent. Of course, it's good for teams to not just be completely in the dark. However, if you're completely in the dark, it's like, okay, what do we do to get into TI? We play our best Dota. Within this system, what do we do to get into TI? We have to be invited to this thing. Otherwise, we have no chance.
But also, teams aren't adapting. Like, okay, you know what? I made that claim. I don't know well enough. But here is a scenario I could see, right? Mm-hmm. I could see, let's say we stick with the DPC. And 2 years from now, like, most teams have an advocate. They have somebody who goes to tournament organizers and like, you should really invite Fnatic to this tournament. We've got these great players. They've got these fans. Look at how many followers they have on social media. Look at the money we brought into this tournament. Look at the results we put up. Look at these great matches we put on. You should really invite Fnatic.
Is that your idea?
That's how I think things could go.
But that solves literally nothing because then every team has an advocate, and then it's like, well, sure, but then it's just a bunch of people fighting.
I mean, like, then it's informed decisions, at least. I don't know.
I mean, I don't think tournaments are making completely informed decisions, but I don't think they're not. I bet these people already exist, like, I'm sure. To some extent, like, that's probably the job of higher-up people, perhaps, is to try to schmooze and, like, network with other people in the tournament organizers. Mm-hmm. And so your team's reputation, your organization's reputation helps you get invite spots and stuff like that. But I don't, like, if everybody has a talking head, then what? Do the tournament organizers decide, okay, well, you brought in $36,000 for Galaxy Battles and you brought in $34,000, so we're going to go with $36,000 guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, you know. I think it's just more chatter. I think this system, like the DPC system, is a good idea if you have a consistent format for minors and majors. And if, like, yeah, you just need a consistent format, and then you'd also need consistent invites. And I don't see that happening because that makes no sense business-wise. Like, there's no motivation for organizers to make this DPC system work for the teams. There's no motivation. They're just trying to make an entertaining tournament for people to watch video games.
I think the format one could be worked out. I think there could be, like, some, like, studies could be done, and there could be, like, some research done and be like, this is the format that fucking pulls in the biggest
but
numbers.
But who fucking has to do that? That's Valve.
What? No. I mean, like, I think ESL might fucking do that.
But then there's
like,
going to be
I legitimately
tournament.
Would not be surprised if ESL had that data right now and was
okay,
on
then
it.
All ESL tournaments are that. But then what
Why
about
wouldn't,
PGL well, tournaments?
But, like, if ESL says, like, we did the homework, this is the most profitable way to run a tournament, why would you be another tournament organizer and be like, let's not do that?
What do you mean by profitable? I'm not talking about profitable. I'm talking about fair.
No, but one of the things is consistency.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think if you just want the most fair version, get out of Dota. Honest to God, get out of Dota. That's not the direction this is going to move in no matter what the fuck happens.
What? That's
it's
crazy.
Not. Why would capitalism ever direct?
That's okay. I'm talking about fairness for teams.
Sure.
Accurate representation. I'm talking
about
team skill.
I'm talking about the fact that why would capitalism ever move in the direction of fairness?
No, that's my point. Of course not. It would never. Mm-hmm. There's literally no motivation for, like, some big. I don't. He's not a union. Like some.
Who,
you know? Grand
is it motivated
summit.
For?
Who's what motivated for?
Who is motivated to create a fair tournament?
Nobody.
Okay, then why would it ever happen?
It won't. That's my point. It will never happen.
Right.
So
this
argument will be eternal with, like, this conflict between the player, the teams, and organizers. It's just eternal in this DPC system as it stands.
But I'm saying, like, you're saying that there's another way, and I'm saying no, there isn't. Like,
Valve.
Valve is also a company. Valve is also a bunch of capitalists. Valve is also interested in selling tickets.
No. Valve is not interested in selling tickets to PGL's major.
They're interested in selling I mean, sure they are because there's, you know, like, if PGL does better, then that's more eyes on Dota, and that's also more attention on Dota, and that's more money for the international and also for the Dota game.
Sure.
It's
like
all
overall viewership. Yes, like that kind of thing, yes. But I'm talking about why would think tanks be spinning in PGL on how to have the most fair outcome for teams? Like, there's
right,
no
but
motivation
I don't think,
there.
But I don't
Valve
think they're motivated at
much.
Valve either. I don't think Valve is motivated either.
Oh, I don't think they're motivated either is my issue. Like, I don't think... I don't think they would solve this. Like, a consistent format, or, like, we go to the League of Legends, or we go to, like, I mentioned the Premier League, or the entire English Football League. Like, if there's this consistent system, it's, you know, across the board, this is the format you do. Like, that's more fair. I mean, you still have the issue of invites. I don't see this DPC point allocation system ever being fair, or, like, anything close to fair where teams would shut up about it. And I'm tired of hearing teams talk about it, because I'm like, yeah, I mean, you're totally right, man. And it's happened so often that I'm even like, yeah, this is actually unfair, and this is not a accurate ranking of team skill at the moment.
I've gone the opposite way, where I've tuned them out, because I have come to a similar conclusion that is slightly different, which is teams will never be happy. It doesn't fucking matter about anything. Teams will never be happy, and so I'm going to basically ignore them.
Teams will never be happy. Like, I would agree there as well. But
if PPD ever stopped bitching, he would die.
I don't want to agree with PPD so often, Six. That's my issue.
Then don't.
But then I can't be that kind of person. I wish I could be that kind of person. But it irks me because he's right too often. I want him to just be that salty guy I can tune out a lot of the time. I want EE to be everybody's favorite frequent, you know, complainer.
It feels like the only way for this to get genuinely fair, or at least as close to genuinely fair as I can imagine, is for us to turn into a full-on, like, proper single-managed league, like League of Legends or like a sport.
Yes, which will.
Which is something we have already... It'll never happen, and also it's something that we on this podcast have already rejected.
Yes. It will never happen. I don't know. You need a better fucking algorithm for the DPC points, but I don't want that either. It just, that's why I think it's turning into like this mess.
When it comes to the DPC, I would have a wish for you. I would wish that you would have the courage to accept the things you cannot change.
Oh my. Oh, the soundboard isn't even open. Thank God.
I won't even do the rest.
It's
just
such a big deal. This, like, determining the invites to TI is such, it's the biggest deal in all of Pro Dota.
In our lives. It's the most, basically nothing's more important.
Nothing in my life, yeah. Nothing more is more important than, you know, Fnatic getting their Dota Pro Circuit tournament points. It's just in the pro scene, this is the biggest deal. TI is the biggest deal, therefore getting into TI guaranteed is the biggest deal. And so to have this messy system, it's the thing that bugs me the most. It's the biggest drama, you could say.
I guess that's true. And what if we actually did have like a fucking like hockey or like baseball style or like or fucking football or fucking whatever style league, and the international was just two teams playing for a whole day.
The World Series. What is the run up to the World Series? Like, what are the playoffs like for the World
Series?
Other
teams are playing? I mean,
best of, well, I don't, are they, how does baseball work? Are they best of threes? Like, is there a tournament tree?
So the postseason is a tournament.
Okay.
It's, there's like, they have best of ones in the wild cards. yeah, and then there are best of fives for division, and it's, yeah, I mean, like...
Is the world, the final, is that like a best of seven?
It is a best of seven.
Okay.
And, you know, baseball games take a fucking while.
Why is it a best of seven?
Because they want to get the real best team. And also because the way, like, I mean, the way baseball works is it's like you want to have, like, you could have a best of five, right? But, like, you want to play in both home teams. You want to go to both of their stadiums.
Ah, right.
So, because they both want the tickets. And also because I talked to you a little bit about this last night, incidentally. But there is a divide in baseball between the two leagues, the American and the National League.
Oh, right.
And depending on whose stadium you're in, you're playing by their rules.
Really?
Uh-huh. During the World Series, you can totally have a situation where you're like, okay, well, like, we've done some games over here at the National League Champions. And now we have to go over to the American League Champions. And now we have to play with, you know, no designated hitters.
Hmm, that's interesting.
Yeah,
that's actually quite surprising. Hmm.
You meet on your host terms. It's yeah. So, huh. What would that be in Dota? What would be the divide in Dota if there were two sides of pro Dota?
Oh my god! What if we had two divisions and then you could have like different rules for one? That'd be interesting. That would be, well, I don't know, coach in the room or not during draft, but that's like very minor. Mm-hmm. How about all chat versus in the In the Eastern Hemisphere League, all chat is disallowed. You're not allowed to all chat. And then the Western Hemisphere, all chat is required.
I have the worst idea. You okay. Ready?
Hit it.
Western Hemisphere is Dota as you know it. Or just, like, whatever. Western League, right? Mm-hmm. Eastern League is items sell back for full value.
What? No. Here we go. Western Hemisphere is Dota as we know it, right? Uh-huh. Eastern Hemisphere is that one video you sent me where the map is rotated 180 degrees.
Jesus.
Imagine that, though. Oh, I need to... Let me see if I can find the Suns fans email. Suns fan Dota to email. We'll just send it to them right now, and they'll get work on it. Contact. There's a contact. Sunsfan@sunsfan.gg. Send it to him right now.
All right. Well, I think we should skip over a bunch of our pro drama because that actually took a really fucking long time.
Wow, that did. We really care about the DPC. But, you know, it is the most important pro drama of the year, I feel like. Right before we get to TI, you know.
It's both the most important and also, like, the least, because nothing's going to change.
And it's so boring to actually talk about specifics, too. So we're talking in the general terms of, you know, what could happen.
Nick, is a pro mad at Reddit?
No. That can't be. I will not... I choose to not believe.
I'm looking at the notes, and I can see his name, so I think you're lying.
Really? That seems some strange person has written here that, I forget how people, casters say his name. Seven King Mad?
Wait. Didn't we have a thing where he changed his name? Isn't he Seven Mad now? That was you.
Was
that
me?
Was not me.
That was me. Yeah. Okay. I thought you said his name was Mad. Okay. So we'll just cut Seven Mad. Sebastian. His name is Sebastian. He's the
Sebi.
Sebi. There we go. Sebi. No. He's the coach for OG, and he's been standing in for them. And, what was this in reference to? Something that went on during Star Ladder, perhaps? I don't know. Seven Mad tweeted something complaining about how people on Reddit are, you know, backseat team coordinators. They know what's best for the players. And... like, you know, we see this every once in a while. It's like, hey, everybody on Reddit, please shut the fuck up. You don't know what you're doing. Like, these people are professionals, yada, yada. And there's always the different sides. Like, well, of course, you know, this person is the pro. They know what's going on. People on the internet don't know what's going on. They're just, you know, sitting in their chairs, clacking on their keyboards.
It's the wisdom of the crowd, Nick.
Yeah. And, like, the same old thing. But then there was this reply from Bulldog saying, like, well, fucking, of course, man. Have you seen literally any sport ever? And then Bulldog even released this, like, twit-longer thing. Normally it's the EE who does this and fucking blogs about everything. But no, Bulldog was, like, had this serious thing and talked about it. And it's like, you know, of course there's going to be people who are shitty on the internet. But also, hey, we only get to do this because of the internet, especially Dota 2. It's a very grassroots, community-up-built thing. So, like... yeah, of course there's going to be shitters on the internet, especially in like Reddit or whatever the hot Dota 2 hub is of the current time, the current year, whatever. Mm-hmm. But also, like, hey man, you only get to fucking do this because of the entire community. And also, like, why are you even complaining about this? You're a professional. You should just ignore the trolls on Reddit. Like, have you ever seen... The most stereotypical American thing is some, like, guy in a wife beater with some sort of beer can yelling at a TV about a thing that happened in football. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah.
Or like, come on, ref. Something. That's, you know, that's the best stereotype of America we have to offer. It's just a thing in any sport where, like, you know, people think they know best. And sometimes people do make mistakes, and then people point it out, like, you know, oh, if only they did this, if only they did that. Maybe or maybe not, that's the actual case. You know, maybe Joe Flacco shouldn't have thrown that, you know, interception there. What an idiot. You know, he's so bad now. Well, I mean, he's still like a fucking professional player getting in the NFL, getting paid millions of dollars. He's got all these different things that went through his head. You know, he went, you know, had different decisions to make, yada, yada, yada. This is a thing in fucking every sport. And so I liked Bulldog's reply that, like, hey, man, you're pro. You're just, this is never going to stop. You're just not supposed to care. Don't take the advice of trolls on the internet.
Yeah.
That's my rant on that.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, like, listen, frankly, like, I'm flattered if you listen to this podcast. Don't take anything we fucking say. We don't fucking know shit compared to, you know, like, we know, okay, we know shit. Listen, you know what? Listen, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. Jackie, listen.
Please.
You really need to listen to us about cooking. You're really bad at it, my dude. We will help you cook. It's okay. But if we tell you how to play Dota, there you should fucking ignore us.
Of fucking course. Yes.
Yeah. No.
But hey, like, this is the community we're going to highlight when EE makes a baffling play, because that's what people do. That's what people watch. That's what we find funny. And then Indeed. It's up to, you know, the discerning listener whether our just scintillating DPC talk is bullshit or not, and, you know, whether we should be reported or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a low priority for podcasts where we don't get to choose who our co-host is? We just get a random person from a random podcast?
It's called Oops All Anime.
Buffy by Scanline Media. Yep. Boy. So I think that's okay. One more piece of pro drama. Rezo, we mentioned earlier. We know where he is now. He's on VGJ Storm because it seems like, sadly, Tomato is not on VGJ Storm anymore. It seems like it might have been a visa issue thing. We're not sure, but yeah.
Yeah, so it's a shame.
Lots of shuffling going on. Oh, Anna. Yes, the Australian Chinese. I don't know. He Australian. And Ferev have a new stack. I don't remember what it's called. Yeah. There's a lot of shuffling going on.
Yeah, no, it's a crazy time where teams are not paying attention to the fact that they're going to get disqualified from the DPC if they keep this up. Gosh, I wonder why the DPC isn't working.
Yes, it's just these people being like, oh shit, we changed our roster. I'd never even realized that, you know, we got disqualified. There was no thought about, you know,
we just were having pizza and then one of our team members was gone.
Shit, man, if only we listened to Reddit and they told us, how could they fucking do this? Don't they realize they got disqualified?
We really
should consult Reddit before, you know. Reddit should sit in on our board meetings.
We're Reddit's favorite Dota podcast.
Reddit approved.
We're Reddit's second favorite Dota pod. We're Reddit's fifth favorite Dota podcast.
Oh, being downvoted as we speak. Boy, I think that's been a solid hour of Dota 2 talk, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm ready for honestly. So I got home from work and I recorded another podcast, and then I started editing it, and you were like, "Hey, are we gonna record Bottle Crow?" And I was like, "Oh shit, I forgot." And so then we started recording this, and I haven't really eaten, so I'm getting kind of hungry.
Oh boy, well, I'm gonna do my mest to make you drool.
My absolute mess to make you gruel.
Gruel.
All right.
I should try gruel.
Yes. I mean, it's intentionally boring.
Indeed.
It's good for when you can't keep food down, though.
True.
Nick, welcome to Jackie's Chow.
Thank you for having me. I'm so chowed.
This week, you're doing almost all of the talking.
You just get to react.
It's wow.
Like, wow. Excellent. Nobody's ever done that before in the history of food. It's a dish-zaster. Dish-zaster. There we go. I was really reaching for that one. So, I'm going to talk about a thing that I made this Saturday because it turned out well. I'm like, hey, I'm just gonna talk about this because we haven't had a topic planned. So, this is a Cease special recipe version of Jackie's Chow, and I'll be talking about my experience with what I'm calling modern traditional style Japanese grilled pizza.
Cool.
On Saturday, It was a nice day. One of the nicer days out that we've had, of the like 3 or so days of actual spring-ish weather we've had on the East Coast here. And so,
all right, I'll stop.
No, it's great. It's, you know, little folding noises here and there. You can make the food folding noise when I like name an ingredient. It'll be great. That way you don't have to edit it in later, like I'm sure you otherwise would. So, grilled pizza. I will say the name. I will say the location of that one place in Poland. So, grilled pizza. It's a thing that I've made, I think, 2 or 3 times before with, let's say, various levels of failure. The first time I made a whole wheat dough, or at least semi-whole wheat dough, and I was just not ready for that point. It was a little bit optimistic. I'm like bake bread every once in a while, and you got to start, like, if I was teaching somebody to bake bread, you got to start with just white flour. It's just everything's easier with dough with white flour. Yeast are just far more happy. And so, like, yeah, you know, it was fine. And this wasn't a grill I was familiar with. It's a propane grill is what I have. So I wasn't familiar with it. So there was a little more carbonization than I was, you know, going for. Second time was a little bit better, I think, but the dough, the cook time still wasn't super great. But this time, Saturday, it was a nice day. Me and friend of the show, Hotto Dogger, decided to make another grilled pizza. But this time, we tried a mayonnaise miso Japanese-style grilled pizza.
So, when you're saying grilled pizza,
yes,
are you throwing this on a charcoal grill? Are you doing a flat top? What are we talking about here?
My propane grill. So I'm still using the propane grill. So it has, you know, metal bars for, you know,
horizontal. So it is like bar type. Gloves.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, that kind of actual grill. You could probably do this with a grill pan too. But, like, the thing about how you can't normally make typical pizza at home is you can't get the crazy temperatures of a, like, commercial pizza oven, right? Mm-hmm. That's the secret to good, like, New York style cardboard pizza. It's like the super high temperature, short cook time. But the hottest temperature you can reasonably get in most places is like a grill. That's what the grill is great for in certain instances. So would I start? Here, let me start with the ingredients. But yes, this grilled pizza, literally I put dough onto a grill. That's what I mean by that. Okay. So the dough, it's a typical pizza dough. Perhaps we can talk about, like, you know, baking dough stuff like on another show. But it's a typical pizza dough, but instead of using olive oil, normally, like, pizza dough has more olive oil than a typical, I don't know, like, bread dough or something. I used peanut oil because I think that would suit a, like, an Asian-style thing better than olive
oil. Yeah, the flavors would seem more appropriate.
Yeah. So, you know, I just made the dough how I would normally make every dough. Also, by the way, weigh everything. When you're doing baking, the secret to baking, just weigh everything. Stop measuring by volume. And it's just so much easier. It's so much more consistent. But that's probably for another segment. So I have this dough. I made enough, you know, dough for, I think, like how big were they? Like 10 to 12 inch pizzas, probably. I made 4. So we made 2, and then I have like 2 in my freezer now, which is great because you can always freeze doughs. That's another great thing about dough. Next up, mayonnaise. Instead of, you know, a tomato sauce that you'd put on the most traditional, conventional pizza, we decided to use mayonnaise. I think Harodagu saw this on some Japanese thing, probably like Japanese Domino's maybe or something. Apparently, like, mayonnaise is a common thing they use. And, like, mayonnaise, I think in Japan, is a surprisingly common condiment these days. So I'm like, you know what? That actually sounds really good. So I made homemade mayonnaise for the first time. I've never done it. It's not hard. I don't really use mayonnaise a lot. I'm known, like, probably a lot of Slavic dishes, maybe. Like, there's a lot of Russian stuff that uses mayonnaise. I've just never done it. But what I did, I took, I think, like, 2 egg yolks. You get a little bit of salt normally, but in this case, no salt, just 2 egg yolks. And then you need some sort of acid. And so I used half rice vinegar and half lemon juice, which, you know, that's good. And then a little bit of Dijon mustard. This is a thing for just typical mayonnaise. You, like, put in some sort of Dijon, like English mustard that's a little bit spicy or something. And then you control the tang of the mayonnaise with how much that acid you pour in. And I figured instead of white vinegar, let's just go with rice vinegar, you know, continue the Asian theme. And next up, well, there's two ways to do this. Traditionally, you know, you somehow have to beat this. So either you use a whisk in a bowl with these ingredients and you vigorously hand whisk, or you use a food processor or something. I have a stick blender, an immersion blender, and so I just
immersion
put all the
ingredients.
Immersion
blenders are so good.
They're so great. And so I just put it into this beaker, and it basically did it for me. However, there's sources online that will tell you, unlike traditional recipes where you have these ingredients that I've mentioned, and then you really, really slowly add in oil as you vigorously, like, whisk or somehow, you know, agitate the ingredients, you very, very slowly have to add the oil so that things don't separate in your mayonnaise.
Sure.
This, like, stick blender way, you do it by pouring everything basically into a beaker, because there's, like, a plastic beaker-type cup that comes with most stick blenders. And they'll tell you to just put in all of the oil on top. So, like, to all this stuff, I eventually used, like, a cup and a half of peanut oil.
Mm-hmm.
I first tried that by adding all the oil. And then what you're supposed to do, you're supposed to, like, put the actual blending part at the bottom where the yolks are. And so it's supposed to, like, blend from the bottom so things don't separate. Yeah, that didn't work.
Yeah. This is actually very similar to how I make hollandaise. You have to do it gradually as well. If you do it all at once, it's just going to separate.
Like, there's these videos online of people doing this all at once, and I'm like, you know what? Screw it. You know, let's see if this non-traditional recipe technique works. Maybe I screwed it up. Maybe I would try it again, waste another two egg yolks and a cup of oil or something, but it didn't work for me. So then I had to throw that out, and then I restarted and just slowly, based on the eggs and stuff, poured in this peanut oil. And eventually, I had this ridiculously thick, like, off-white, yellowish mayonnaise. And it was so good. Like, I tasted it, like, holy shit, this is great. Hey, mayonnaise, turns out it's easy to make, too. So that was my thing I discovered. And then, I mentioned I haven't salted it because I'm adding miso paste to this. Because, you know, continuing the Asian theme, and I think that would work great on a pizza, is a miso mayonnaise. And miso is this, like, fermented soybean paste. It's a Japanese thing too, for a Japanese grilled pizza. It's very good. Like,
miso's,
I think the most
great.
Common thing it's used in is miso soup, probably. But it's got a lot of the umami, the savoriness packed in there. And it's also very salty, so that's why I didn't, you know, season everything after. So then I mixed in, probably to every cup of mayonnaise, I mixed in, I think I used like 4 or 5 tablespoons of miso total. So it was like a good amount, and it properly seasoned, you know, salted my mayonnaise, and it turned the color almost, it actually didn't turn the color very much. I used white miso. There's like different kinds of miso you can use. I used white miso. I like folded it in with a spatula, like whisked it in a little bit, and it was really good. And yeah, so that's the like sauce for my pizza. Lastly, of course, we've got a dough, we've got a sauce. We needed toppings. So Harodagu has made kakuni before. It's this Japanese braised pork belly, basically. So you get a delicious, you know, pound or two of pork belly, which is just ridiculously fatty. You braise the hell out of it. You keep skimming the fat. And eventually you've boiled down all the liquid and stuff. Mm-hmm. It gets so tender, though. It is ridiculously good. There'll be some of the fat left. It'll just completely melt. And then the meat, it just completely melts. So what I did, I kind of sliced that up, not too thin, but into chunks, and then I fried that up just in the pan. You don't need any fat with that. It's got enough. Just turn on the heat, and I kind of put color onto the meat topping.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the stuff, we blanched some baby bok choy to get rid of some of the bitterness. The baby bok choy is already sweet, so that was like a good green to have on top. And then just in my cabinets, I have shredded seaweed, which gives like a cool seaweedish flavor. It gives a little texture. I also have katsuboshi, which is like bonito flakes. It's like it's literally shredded smoked fish, but it's, I don't know, it gives it not a fishy flavor, but like a smokedness, if you've ever had them. I don't know how to explain it.
It's, yeah, cool. I don't know how to describe it. I know what you mean. I've had bonito flakes, but I don't know how to describe it.
It's like smoked. And when you apply it, like if you put them on something in Esso as an actual topping, because you can make stock out of it too. If you put it on something hot, they'll kind of like wilt because they're super thin. And so that was good. And then I also used this Japanese 7 spice powder. So it's got a little bit of spiciness in there. Like you might put this on ramen. Maybe you would see it in a restaurant, but this is like a blend that also has like citrus powder, black sesame seeds, stuff like that. So that was like the spice aspect of, you know, the topping. So I've got all these great things. Rolled out my dough finally when it was finished, slapped it on the grill, you know, oiled it up, slapped it on the grill, closed the lid for a certain amount of minutes, probably like 3 or 4 minutes, till we've got some good grill marks on the underside. Not quite charred because I didn't want to take it that crispy, but I started with this blazingly hot grill. As soon as the dough is in there, turn down the heat so it's at like medium or low, or put it on indirect heat if you're using charcoal or something so you don't just completely toast the hell out of the bottom and burn it like I did before. Once that's been cooked for 3 minutes, flip it over, put some more oil on it, put your toppings on there, close the grill once more. It's going to act as an oven as it finishes the bottom side of the crust. Another 3 to 4 minutes later, take that out. Everything's melted. Everything's hot. You know, sprinkle on the rest of the like spice powder or something that you would want to put on there. You could probably drizzle some more oil over. I didn't need to. Then we like sliced it up. Oh my goodness. This was so good. This, I think I've finally gotten grilled pizza right. So next time I might try like traditional pizza with, you know, marinara, something like that. Margarita pizza, rather. But, oh, I can finally make like a decent pizza style dough on my grill. So that's what.
Yeah. So that seems like a lot of steps, but no single step seems all that hard. Except for.
It does. I did talk for a while about it, but.
Yeah. I've never tried making kukuni, though, so I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't do that, thankfully. It took like 6 hours of braising. I think you could definitely do that, but it's not a very active process. It's the same thing with like baking and dough. It's really quite an inactive process. It has a long-ish duration. Mm-hmm. But you can make this dough forever in advance. Like I've got a bunch of dough in my freezer now, so I can just defrost it, slap it on the grill, make it whenever. And then you can just put whatever toppings on you want. Like the mayo, it honestly took 3 minutes to make. I could do it in 2 minutes now that I know what I'm doing. All the other toppings, like blanching the bok choy, I just, you know, literally throw it in boiling water for a minute and you're done. That was my Japanese grilled pizza experience for this weekend. I think fantastic. Jackie might approve. He seems to like Asian style cuisine.
He seems to like mayonnaise. He's all about that mayonnaise.
Eternal Envy email. Do you like mayonnaise?
Eternal Envy mayonnaise. Should I Google it? Let's find out.
A Lejacky Mayo. First result is a YouTube video. It's a minute long.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a baffling Jack Lee play overlaid with pictures of Envy's face on a mayonnaise can and anime things. And a mayonnaise jar.
You know, I had faith that this was going to be a thing.
My name is Mayo Stank. You know what? Hopefully we can be the first result when you entitle this episode Jackie LeMayo.
Oh, like Lamau. Okay.
Did you not get that bad joke? That's a good thing, probably.
No, I don't with the memes so much.
You're not a meme person? Really? Unbelievable.
Turns out. I managed to avoid having a meme of the week this week. Anyway, let's go into the plug zone.
Yeah.
Before you can come up with something. Nick, where can people find you on the internet?
That's a good question.
Usually you don't bother plugging things, but I'm going to nag you this time.
You know what? You can find me at nick@bottlecrow.com if you want to email. You could tweet @WeLikeSleeves with all your pictures of sleeves. We really appreciate any, you know, Dota 2-related sleeve pictures as well. And
Mayo-related sleeves?
Mayo. Actually, this week, if you tweet me a picture of your sleeves with mayonnaise, I will give you a... somebody at We Like Sleeves, because I obviously don't run the account, of course, will give you a great review of your mayonnaise sleeves. That's a guarantee, a sleeve guarantee.
All right. Well, and then we'll go into the straight, normal plug zone for Bottle Crow, which is that Bottle Crow Reborn is available on, you know, podcatcher of choice. You could recommend it to a friend, think they might appreciate it. We are very grateful to Reddit user Promoti, aka Jeffrey Bryce, who created our intro and outro music, which is the Highlander Music Pack. You can find it in the Steam Workshop if you want to help get it into Dota 2. I also want to give a big thank you to Ashley Ryan, aka Svimmy, who is the artist who did our podcast art. You can find Bottle Crow on Twitter at Bottle Crow if you want to send us any questions or comments or anything. Maybe you will get on the show. Maybe not. I'm not promising. And yeah, we're part of the Scanline Media Network, and I'm probably, you know what? I'm not going to do it this episode, but I'm going to create like a little bumper for Scanline Media so I don't have to just list all the podcasts every time, and I can just put in this pre-made sound file that's like, hey, here's a little sample of all the podcasts
you
that
know,
I...
Just for you, if you just send me like a, you know, a text file with all the names of your podcasts, I'll just say them, and then you can put them just over each other. So it's just, you know, the length of one podcast name, but you could put all the 15,000 podcasts that are on Scanline Media.
Oh, I'm actually going to do like a job of it. There's going to be like, oh, you know, Scanline Media, such podcasts as like Bottle Crow. And then there's going to be like a little clip from an episode of Bottle Crow that's like enticing and engaging and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to do the whole thing. I'm going to do it upright. I'm just not going to do it right now because I'm fucking tired. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Peace out.